Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Hello, this is Duncan Barks, and it's yet another Dunkcast, or Dunkcast, depending on who you are and where you're listening to this piece of audio. Anyway, thank you for taking the time to download it, and thank you very much for your continued support of what I get up to on City Talk 105.9 across Liverpool, North West England and North Wales. In a few minutes' time, you'll hear my conversation with a former North West squaddie. His name is Steve McLaughlin. I spoke to him on the day the Iraq War inquiry was due to start, and I think it's pretty safe to say that the majority of us reckon this inquiry will be a total whitewash. You can hear my conversation with Steve in a few moments' time. The issue of banks and bankers never far from our agenda on City Talk Breakfast. And of course, during the week, we are awaiting the decision from the Supreme Court regarding banks and their appeal over unauthorised overdraft charges, because the Office of Fair Trading wanted to take the banks to task about the money they charge people who use their overdraft whilst unauthorised. Ahead of this decision being made, and we now know that the high street banks won the appeal, I spoke to our financial guru Ian Howarth from Parker Kelly Financial Services about this, because one of the things that has been floated was that if the banks were going to lose their appeal, they might start charging banking customers to use cash points. You know, you would go up to the hole in the wall at your local branch. You know, it could well be the branch of your bank, not someone else's, and you'd have to pay a fee to take your money out of your account. Ian and I had a robust conversation about this, and you can hear that as well as this podcast continues. I also spoke to a gentleman by the name of Roger Martin, all about the idea of putting a limit on the amount of children a family can have. You can hear that conversation a little bit later on. And a lady by the name of Debbie Jones, who I like. She's a robust lady. Yeah, she's also the prospective parliamentary candidate for Sefton Central. To wind her up, we sometimes call her a wannabe MP. And she's a Conservative. She joined me in the studio during the week to do one of our newspaper reviews, but we ended up talking about dog poo and chewing gum. You see, we tackle all of the issues on City Talk Breakfast. You can hear that conversation a little bit later on. And of course, we had another Dunkin's Donut for you. I don't know about you, but I get sick of hearing these parents banging on about their kids. And we're talking about the kids who get expelled from school, or whack a teacher, that kind of feral youth. And yet the parents always going, oh no, he's misunderstood. Really, he's a little angel. Well, I say that's a load of grade A balls, and you can hear my thinking in more detail at the end of the Dunkcast or Dunkcast. Thank you as ever for listening, and enjoy.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
The Iraq War inquiry gets underway today. The man leading the investigation is retired civil servant Sir John Chilcourt, and he's told City Talk 105.9 it won't be a whitewash.
It won't be, but the judgment as to whether people think it is will lie on how it's read when it comes out. Two things need to be said. The first is that all five members of the committee, myself included, are now completely independent from different perspectives and different bodies of experience. What you can't do is make up a committee like this of people who have no experience of the workings of government from the inside. We have two very eminent historians, both of whom specialise in war studies and in the history of war and military operations. we have the extremely independent Baroness Usha Prashar, who was first civil service commissioner, a post that is guaranteed in terms of its independence. For myself, I've been outside government for a very long number of years now, as has Roderick Lyon. There is one other point worth making, which is that when you set up an independent inquiry of this sort, you set the members of it free to do what they will. And our determination is to do not merely a thorough job, but one that is frank and will bear public scrutiny.
Well, some interesting words there. That's Sir John Chilcourt. He's the man leading the Iraq war inquiry that starts today. But do his words carry any real meaning? Let's get a view on this. Steve McLaughlin is a former squaddie from North West England. He served in Iraq. He's also author of the book Squaddie, A Soldier's Story. And he joins me on the line. Morning, Steve.
Morning.
Good to talk to you as ever. You just heard the man leading the inquiry into the Iraq war. He's saying that it won't be a whitewash. What's your take?
Well, it's a very fine sentiment and very noble words, and I look forward to the manifestation of their actions, which I very much doubt will happen.
What do you think will happen? What do you think we'll see?
I think we'll see at the most quite severe criticism of some senior government officials. But that'll be as far as it goes, because he's already said it's not a judicial inquiry. It's not a case of finding guilt or innocence. It's more a case of lessons learned, mistakes that were made, all in good faith, etc., etc.
In my experience, when we have similar inquiries, what tends to happen is there tends to be a couple of scapegoats who get hauled over the coals, their careers and reputations are ruined, though those that really have some questions to answer tend to get away scot-free.
Yeah, no doubt they'll probably find some junior anchors to throw to the wolves. But the real culprits, well, the people who I would suggest are guilty, are the likes of Tony Blair, Alistair Campbell, Gordon Brown. And perhaps the biggest culprit of all was Sir John Scarlett, who was the head of the intelligence services. And he, you know, deliberately falsified and manipulated this WMD dossier at the behest of Lord Goldsmith, who was then Attorney General. I mean, the initial dossier apparently wasn't powerful enough, didn't state that, that weapons of mass destruction were there. And he was told to go away and come back with a stronger version, and he did. And Lord Goldsmith himself, the Attorney General, said, first of all, the war was clearly illegal, and he was told by Tony Blair to go away, look at it again, change his advice, and he came back with the advice, you know, excuse me, that the war was now legal. And he was the Attorney General, so how can you, you know, consider prosecuting the most senior judge in Britain? It's, you know, you can't really, can you?
You mentioned some people that you believe are guilty, Blair, Campbell, Brown and Scarlett. What would you like, ideally, to see happen to them?
Well, I would like them to see them to be held to account, but that will not happen. I mean, in the fantasy world, it will happen, but in the real world, it will not happen, because these people are simply too powerful. Even today, they are very, very powerful. And it's interesting to note, every single person that was associated with the initial decision to invade Iraq has been rewarded with either a knighthood or a lordship or an advancement in their career. Every single person. And ironically, those that opposed it have taken a step backwards and their careers have finished, as you said earlier. So it's interesting to see. I mean, straight away, what I've noticed, that this Sir John Chilcot, he's only a sir. So he's got potential to go one up. You know, he could become a lord or a baron in future years as a reward for service. So I'm very cynical about these things.
It has all the signs and indications of an establishment stitch-up.
I think so, yeah, because... You know, when you have the establishment investigating the establishment, I don't know how it can be anything other than that, really.
Yeah.
And these are all knights, lords and ladies. And they've all got a vested interest in it. So, I mean, politically, it will be unpalatable. There's no possible way we could ever see Tony Blair prosecuted for this or called an outright liar. I mean, the likes of you and I can in the media. But there's no possible way a government figure could come out and say, I think certain members of the British government... deliberately falsified, misled and told lies to Parliament and to the general public, because that will be evidence of a crime, a clear crime, and there would have to be prosecutions. Now, these people are too powerful to prosecute. You know, you're talking about the absolute ruling class of this country. You cannot prosecute them, unfortunately.
You use the word lies, and, you know, that is the nub of all of this, isn't it? I remember very clearly on the run-up to the Iraq War, and I was working at a radio station as a journalist elsewhere, all of this information being trotted out by the government and even by the MOD and MI6 saying, we believe Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. And that was highlighted time and time again and pretty much given as the only reason as to why we should invade Iraq and topple the regime there. And then, of course, over the last 2 or 3 years, it's almost like we've moved away. You know, the argument for hunting out weapons of mass destruction that clearly weren't there has totally been watered down, and other reasons given for invading the country.
Yeah, things change. You know, it migrates to human rights and then trying to bring freedom and democracy. Basically, they change the reasons as they go along. It's the same in Afghanistan. You know, every week we're given a different reason why we should be there, for example. But in Iraq, even at the time, there was a lot of disquiet and discontent. I mean, within the military, it was a standing joke. You know, we used to joke about the non-existent WMDs. It seemed that the whole world knew there really wasn't any. And what strikes me as frankly absurd is that Tony Blair and John Scarlett, men at the very, very heart of the British government, they still maintain the fiction and they still claim that they really believed WMD was there. I mean, Alistair Campbell, he's another crook. I mean, that guy, you know, he actually said in his memoirs, he's got no idea how they got it wrong. You know, he's mystified by it all, and it still baffles him. He's completely removed himself from it, and he talks about it like it's an abstract academic theory, when these guys sat in a smoke-filled room and literally cooked up a witch's brew and said, right, we need a justification to go into Iraq. What can we say? How can we get away with it? How can we do it? And WMD, you know, we were all told there was a chance within 45 minutes Saddam Hussein could send, a WMD to London, for Christ's sake. Absolutely ridiculous, absurd. Even some advanced modern countries would struggle to do that. So clear, blatant lies, and they can't get away from it, and they can't deny it.
My final question, Stephen, is this. You're a former squaddie. You served in Iraq. Obviously, you'll still have friends in the military. Either yourself or your ex or indeed current colleagues, what one question would you like the answer to?
Why did so many good men die for nothing?
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
You know, this democracy, what's it producing for the Afghanistan people?
All right, let me ask you this question. What's the alternative then? Turn the country back over to the Taliban? Because the Taliban aren't exactly known for their fair and rational decision-making. They don't like gays, they don't like homosexuals, they're quite happy to stone people. What do you do?
But neither does Karzai.
But what do you do?
And the people who are in power do exactly the same kind of thing.
So what's the answer? What do you do?
I don't know. I think what we need to do, because obviously this is about a comprehensive peace solution, isn't it, for Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I think, and I've said it before on your radio show, the West needs to speak to the Taliban.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
Now let's talk about financial stuff. A load of stuff I want to get through over the next chunk of time, including this report that's come out from Which, the consumer organisation, saying that banks are still finding sneaky ways to make money out of us all.
Yeah, I mean, we thought a while back that they cleaned all the, you know, cleaned their act up a little bit, and they got rid of all these unfair charges off the back of the court case that's still bouncing around at the moment.
Yeah.
And this is saying that they're still charging sneaky fees with the average overdraft rate of nearly 19%, which is pretty hefty.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that these charges can spiral, and once you know, if you go overdrawn, you get charged a fee. There's an example.
It snowballs so quickly.
Without a doubt. I mean, there's an example here. It gives a lady, a husband was off ill, so there was obviously a lack of income coming in. They went slightly overdrawn. They were hit with a £35 charge. Over the years, so they spiralled, as you said, and she ended up paying over £4,000 off that one charge, with everything spiralling up over the years.
I was reading something on the front page of one of the papers yesterday. I think it was the Mail on Sunday, and you mentioned this court case about overdraft fees. And we've got this thing that about, it's around 1 million people are challenging their banks, aren't they, about the amount they're being charged. And the latest information I was reading, I think the case is this coming Wednesday, even though this has been dragging on since God was a boy. And someone was floating the idea yesterday, if the banks lose and have to pay all this money back, they're going to try and have to look at ways of recouping the cash. And one of the ideas that, sadly, is getting some weight and support from many of the banks is to charge people to use their cash points. Not kind of like, not these ones that you see where you have to pay £2 anyway. You would be charged to go to your own bank or a branch of your own bank to actually take your money out of your account.
Yeah, I can see the argument in a way, but if you think
No, there's no argument here.
There is, because...
No, there isn't. There's not an argument. It's my money. I should be able to take it out of my account whenever I want. They can't charge me or any of my listeners to do that, can they?
Why shouldn't they? Because they are holding...
Because it's my money!
It's your money, but you're giving it them to look after, so why shouldn't they charge you a fee for doing so?
Absolute rubbish. You're supposed to be on our side.
I can see... I'm going to be neutral
here. They make plenty of money elsewhere, as is proved by this report from Which?
And they also lose money elsewhere
well,
as
well. Well, whose fault's that?
That's their own fault.
Exactly. But so why should I have to pay the penalty?
If they rule in favour of you and me, and let's say they say, okay, yep, the charges are unfair, you can have your money back. The banks have got no money anyway, so where are they going to get it from?
It's this perverse situation, okay? They've been fleecing customers with unfair overdraft fees. They get taken to task. Around 1 million people kick off about it, write letters, etc., etc. Oh, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, it looks like the banks might have to pay it back. So they come along and go, oh, well, we're going to have to do that. Do you know what? You want to take your money out of your account. You've given us your custom for God knows how many years. We're going to start charging you. It is ridiculous. Everyone should take their money out of the banks and stick it under their mattresses and buy a shotgun.
Quite possibly. And what you will find is that there's going to be one or two or a few banks that are not going to do that, and they're just going to sweep the board, and they're going to get everybody's custom, because if you're going to start getting charged £2 every time you take a tenner out, you're going to move banks.
Absolutely.
So maybe good for competition then?
Possibly. And let me just get your take on this seriously for a second, because I did go off on one there. What do you think is going to happen with this court case on Wednesday? I mean, do you think it's likely that they're going to be ordered to pay the money back?
Very possibly. They've ruled in favour, then the appeal. It's gone backwards and forwards for 18 months, 2 years now. I think there's going to be a real problem if they do say, yep, the charges are unfair, because let's face it, they are unfair. Mm. That's the whole thing is that word unfair. Is it unfair if you go overdrawn that you're charged 30, 40 quid for them to process a letter or something like that? It is unfair. Will we get our money back, though? I don't know.
Let's try and do something positive for the banks. And one bank that's, scrapping overdraft charges is Santander.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of them come out since all this really kicked off. This is Abbey, they're bringing out, or Santander, as you say.
Yeah.
They're bringing out a fee-free account, which is going to be from January the 11th. The bad news is it's for existing customers only. It's not one of these that you get it for new customers. So if you've got an Abbey account, they're doing away with the overdraft charges and things like that. It's only a small number of people can get one. They reckon fewer than 3 million of its 25 million account holders can do it. But they're going to do away with the fees for bounce checks, unpaid direct debits, those kind of things, and that's available from January the 11th, and let's hope a few other banks follow suit.
The issues that matter to you. News, reaction, analysis, great conversation, and a healthy dose of opinion. This is City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks on City Talk 105.9.
Fascinating survey was done a couple of days ago. It appeared in the newspaper yesterday. It revealed almost a third of Britons would support a law limiting the number of children per family. This was a poll for Metro newspaper. Restricting parents to just one or two children was necessary to combat overpopulation. According to 29% of those surveyed, less than half, 45%, would oppose such a law. Some interesting results there. Do you think we should limit the amount of children per family? How far would you go? And how would you implement such an idea? Well, let's talk about this in more detail. Roger Martin is chairman of the Optimum Population Trust, and he's my guest this morning. Morning, Roger.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Thank you for your time. What's your immediate reaction to these findings?
I think these are very strong, surprisingly high figures, really, for coercion. We had expected, I think, lower figures supporting coercion, but very high figures, as validated in our own poll in June, wanting the population to stabilise and then come down again, because we are the most overcrowded country in Europe, that's England, and when the government says the projections show we're going to have to build 10 new Birminghams in the next 23 years, and the polls show overwhelming evidence that we don't want it, it is quite astonishing that the Home Secretary should say he's totally relaxed about it.
Mm.
What planet's the man on?
Well, that's a question many of us ask. I mean, I'm reading that the British population stands at 61 million and is projected to exceed 70 million by 2029.
That's right. Yep, it's an extra 10 new Birminghams. All the other projections earlier, going to 2080, show perhaps 25 new Birminghams by 2080, if current trends continue. Basically, we are overcrowded, and the quality of life of ordinary people is badly affected by this, as they say when you ask them in response to polls like ours. Frankly, this most recent one was an odd one, wasn't it? Because it was on the back of another longer poll about Nick Griffin.
Yeah.
I would put more confidence in our own, but nonetheless, the polling results are quite consistent. We all know we're overcrowded and the government doesn't care.
What would you like to see happen, Roger? Obviously, you're chairman of the Optimum Population Trust. What would you like to see happen, and how far do you go in controlling the amount of children people can have?
Well, we are flatly against any form of coercion, so we want any reduction to take place by voluntary means.
Yes, but you and I know we live in a world where if you ask people to actually take self-responsibility for their actions, there's always going to be a chunk of society who will simply ignore it.
Well, yes, but of the measures that came out from our own poll, it was found that the highest percentage, 69%, wanted, as it were, some reduction in immigration, down to balanced migration. We would favour balanced migration, because you can't be in favour of stabilising population while ignoring half the reason why it's growing.
No, I understand that, but how far do you go with mums and dads? They want to have a couple of children. They think, do you know what, I quite like a third. How do you actually put something in place, whether or not it's legislation or something else, to say you can't have any more children? It's not going to happen.
The first thing you need to do is to get the politicians to recognise the problem, and that's, to be honest, where we need to concentrate the main efforts, because there is this extraordinarily deep-rooted taboo on mentioning this subject at all.
Mm.
But then you can go on, you can look through the benefit system, you can look through the tax credit system, you can try and be smart about dealing with this. For instance, it's very difficult to design ways which many people would favour of reducing child credit for third and subsequent children, but how do you do that without affecting the poor kids who are the innocent victims of all this? Well, let's look instead at things like incentives to have a long-acting, reversible contraceptive fitted after the second child, that kind of thing. There's also...
But isn't that a little bit totalitarian? You're going to wheel some mother into a hospital or a clinic somewhere and go, right, you've had two kids, you popped two out, let's stick some birth control inside you to make sure you can't have any more.
Of course, you can't do it compulsorily. I mean, we wouldn't dream of suggesting it, although it's surprising that 29% of the people apparently think you can. But, no, there are ways of being smart about stabilising it and changing social attitudes. You could change family planning, education especially, because we have the highest number of unplanned pregnancies in Europe, and the Dutch have the lowest. Well, why don't we learn a bit from the Dutch about how they get really good quality sex and relationships education deeply implanted in their young people early.
I think that's interesting. I think you make a fascinating point there. I mean, what I would say is in this country, we chuck millions of pounds at teenagers and children, telling them about sex education, etc., etc., yet we still have one of the highest rates of teenage pregnancies in the United Kingdom. And I've reached the conclusion, Roger, that the problem is this. We have an element of our society who know the messages are out there, they know the information's there, yet they just go ahead and get on with it anyway, ignoring what people tell them.
Well, that is obviously a problem, and one's never going to beat it completely.
Mm.
But at the same time, the evidence from elsewhere in Europe shows that doing these things more intelligently and better resourced is a good idea. It actually works. And the long-acting reversible contraceptives, not just the condom and the pill, are the preferred methods. If some teenager, especially underage teenager, gets pregnant, chooses to go through with it despite all the pressures on her not to, which should be brought to bear in a non-coercive way, and then, as it were, announces her intention of going on and having many more children, well, I think there are certain pressures, for instance, in the Office of Housing and so on, which can be brought to bear on her to say, come on, you've got to be a bit responsible here. We really think you ought to accept this long-acting contraceptive. Or, alternately, face the fact that you're going to be much more on your own than you thought. No question of a council flat for you, my girl, this kind of thing. So there are lots of things...
Well, you can't have people living on the street, can you?
Hmm?
You can't have people living on the street, can you?
No, but you could have hostels where they'd obviously get their basic needs met, and above all, the needs of the poor, wretched children would be met.
Mm.
But they wouldn't mean nice living conditions for the mothers.
Interesting. I mean, I came across a story yesterday. I was talking about it at length on this show about a pregnant mother who already has 13 children, and she's refusing to stop giving birth until she has had twins.
I read that too, and the poor, pathetic woman's obviously addicted to having babies, isn't she? But what I think will...
Well, how do you sort out a problem like that? Because that's a real living, breathing example of some of the people we have to share this country with.
You are absolutely right. But I'd say I am against coercion. It's a bad idea. It doesn't work. It wouldn't be acceptable. But I do think many of us will be quite resentful at the 50 grand a year, which is twice as much as I've ever earned, that we have to subsidise her addiction with out of our own pockets. So let's be smart about it, recognise the problem, deal on the immigration side, which is difficult too, but aim for the goal of balanced migration, and I wouldn't have detailed prescriptions for getting there, but there are ways of doing it if you make that a national target, and then look at ways of trawling through the benefit tax credit and incentive payment schemes in the world to see if there's something you can do about addictees like this wretched woman.
Mm. I think your idea, I mean, certainly getting some support this morning from my listeners. I've just got a text that's appeared on my text screen from Denise saying the answer is to stop rewarding the nitwits who keep having more babies to get more money off the state.
Well, yes, I think the Sharon Matthews situation was a bit an example of that, wasn't it, earlier in the year? And she was clearly making an income from the child benefit to subsidise her own drug addiction. It wasn't... It's not a happy scene, and there are ways, I suspect, if we're smart enough about it, but including the offer of a cash incentive, an offer, I don't know, X hundred pounds, one grand to any woman on the birth of her second child. This is not a policy, but it's an idea that's been floated for a long time. offer £1,000 in cash if she'll have a five-year implant. Well, people would take it up, but it would save the taxpayer a fortune, and it would make the planet a bit less overcrowded for our poor kids to struggle to survive it.
Fascinating conversation. Thank you for your time. That's Roger Martin, chairman of the Optimum Population Trust.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
The gentleman sitting opposite me in my City Talk Breakfast studio is Mike Storey, Lord Mayor of Liverpool. Morning, Mike.
Good morning to you.
An elected mayor for Liverpool. What's your take on that?
As Lord Mayor, I'm meant to keep out of party politics as such, so I have to walk a very careful tightrope
on
this.
But you all have an opinion, Mike.
I have an opinion.
To the conversation.
Yes, I have an opinion, which is, if an elected mayor position ensures local democracy gained more responsibility, then I think it's an important debate to have.
All right,
didn't I walk a straight tightrope there?
Well, I mean, rude, I didn't expect anything less, really.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. The show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking. City Talk.
Just by the way, as I was walking in, I thought I must mention to Duncan, walking through the streets of Liverpool, the centre, you know, at about 7:45, 8:10, how clean it is. What a good job the cleansing department
did.
It was very good. But it brings home and highlights the fact that, and I don't care, I'll probably get all the chewy lovers killing me for this, I think chewing gum should be banned.
Banned. You can't ban chewing gum.
No, but I think it should be. When you look at any lovely area and it is speckled with white chewing. Awful stuff.
And it costs taxpayers in the city centre a fortune because the council have to get this stuff off using steam cleaners.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you say, because when I come in here about 10 to 5 in the morning, I see the guys out cleaning the streets and they're pushing their carts and stuff. And it's almost that hidden bit of Liverpool, isn't it?
Is.
Most normal people don't see.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got their little sort of like buggies driving up and down and stuff,
scarabs.
Keeping the streets clean.
Do they use the scarabs here? The little.
Yeah.
I think, no, they do a great job.
But the chewing gum, I mean, that is an interesting point. What do you do with it? Because actually, you know, on my journey from where I park my car, there are plenty of bins.
Yes.
You know, how hard is it? If you're fed up with your chewing gum and it's lost its flavour, chuck it in a bin.
Yeah. Well,
or swallow it.
Well, it's the type of person that will throw the chew on the floor. Yeah. It's the type of person that personally I'd like to see as the defendant. You know, unforgivable.
It is the thin end of the wedge, isn't it?
Totally,
because if you tolerate people, or people think it's all right to just gob their chewing gum out on the pavement, that shows a lack of respect for society.
Yeah.
Other people
and
their immediate environment and the place where they live.
Completely.
So then, if you follow that to its next logical step, what else do they think is perfectly acceptable
to do? Well, you find as well, when I was walking through, one gentleman gave the most wonderful sort of vile noise and spat on you know. And I mean, I think that sort of thing, you just don't do. You just don't do it. Yeah. And one of the problems is as well, I have this in my area where I'm a councillor, a whole stretch of shops, and the guys do a great job in the morning first thing, but it just reveals the pattern of chewing. And a lot of surfaces you can't clear it off because it lifts the tarmac-y type stuff that they put.
Do you know what
top?
I would do? I would actually arm people with big bamboo sticks.
Yeah.
Right, and have them walking around the streets, and as soon as you see someone gobbing out some chewing gum or even gobbing full stop, I'd have them waxed.
Well, I think that's a damn
fine
idea.
It sounds harsh, but do you know what? It would be very effective. What else have you got in the papers?
Right, in the paper. Right. DNA, front of the Times, it's all over everything else. DNA Times. We are the most observed, the most watched country
in
the
world. No one cares, though. I make this point time and time again on this radio program and elsewhere. It seems to me people aren't bothered with the fact that we've got more CCTV cameras than most of the other countries in the world.
Yeah.
They're not bothered there's a DNA database with samples on there from innocent people who've never been convicted of crimes.
Yeah.
People don't seem to be bothered.
What happens is, if it doesn't affect them, they sleepwalk. We sleepwalk into a police state.
Yeah.
And I think that's very disturbing. But what I would do is I would DNA test every dog that's born. And then when it poops, and we have these tracts of dog dirt, which to me is one of the worst. Another thing that's close to, along with chewing on the floor.
Yeah.
You find out where the dog is because it's microchipped, and you find the owner.
I like your thinking with that. You see, what I find fascinating, and it's an old adage, isn't it? Dog poo on the beach or
it's
the pavements.
It's terrible.
It's the... you talk to dog owners, they all swear blind. They swear blind.
Oh, it's not them.
They poop and scoop. It's never them, it's never their dog. And I can only presume, and the conclusion I've reached, is they're all liars.
Well, no.
They have to be liars,
Debbie, for the
simple reason I see so many bits of dog dirt everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That clearly, they are lying.
No, I agree with you, there's loads of dog dirt, but I see... you are a little...
So-and-so.
Why?
Why has this rattled your cage?
No, because I actually...
And now you're crossing your arms.
I know,
that's very defensive body language.
Confrontational, this is. No, what it is, I actually drive around my constituency and I see good people with their carrier bags. And I am known as a sado paranoid person about dog dirt.
Right.
Because if I see someone walking with the dog and the dog starts to look like it's going to do one, because I've been out with the dog warden and I know the signs now, the elevation of the tail and the squatting stance of the dog as he walks.
Okay.
And if I see that, I haunt, I pull the car up and I watch.
Yeah.
I covertly watch. And if they let that dog poop and they don't pick it up, I'm out of my car with my camera.
Yeah.
Please, because I hate it. Loads of them do it, but there are lots of them equally that look the other way and say, I didn't see it.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
It is City Talk 105.9. I looked at this story this morning and I thought, do I want to make this a donut? Because my danger is I kind of don't want to go too far down the health and safety gone mad route. However, it's the logic in this that I find suitable for making it a donut. Because the logic is flawed. And if you take it to its logical conclusion, you and I wouldn't do anything. Wouldn't even get out of bed in the morning. Wouldn't get into bed. Let me explain. Council chiefs have banned a couple from displaying balloons outside their shop. Do you want to know why? They say one of the balloons could break loose, enticing a child to run after it into traffic. Or the balloons could distract drivers and cause an accident. Derek Betts, who has been threatened with legal action, he owns a shop. Unless he removes them, he says the whole thing is ridiculous. I couldn't believe it when we got a visit from a couple of council jobsworths, he said. This is all happening in Solihull in the West Midlands. The shop is Bespoke Home and Flooring, and Derek and his wife Diane, who run the shop, have written to Parliament and local chambers of commerce to appeal the decision. The local councillor, Ted Richards, defended the council's stance. He said, we have responsibility for ensuring people can use our footpaths safely, something we cannot and do not take lightly. Now, my big issue with this is this. The reason, the argument they've given for saying to this bloke, you've got to get the balloons outside of your shop off, all based on ifs and coulds and maybes and buts, because the council is saying, well, you've got to get rid of those balloons. You're going to be banned from displaying the balloons outside your shop because one of them could break loose and a child could run into the traffic chasing it. Or they could distract drivers and cause an accident. Now, if we all lived our lives on coulds, maybes and ifs, we wouldn't do anything. It's like me saying, oh, we shouldn't have buses on the roads. I'll tell you why, because a wheel could fall off and there could be an accident. Or you shouldn't do this. Because maybe, this might happen or that might happen. Now, I have a degree of sympathy this morning of any local authority because, sadly, we do live in a compensation culture now where we have various ambulance-chasing solicitors out there who, if something goes wrong, what they will do is go, aha, well, local council, you should have done this. So I have a degree of sympathy with local councils. However, I believe this particular news story, the logic is flawed. Oh, you can't have the balloons outside your shop. Because they could break loose and a child may chase after it. We can't carry on living life in this country based around ifs, maybes and coulds.
Go. Duncan's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunk Cast. If you have, please download again next week.